Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Have you been on the internet ever?
No.
Well, maybe you don't know this, but fandoms for things kind of suck. Just in general. They're not really fun to interact with on the internet, a lot of times in real life either. Well, anyway, we're going to be talking about that all today, because being a fan of things, not a bad thing. It's good to like things. But being a fan of things has become exhausting, since nearly every major fandom on the internet has become embroiled in cycles of toxic positivity and hate. Thanks to the longevity of their fan bases, lack of critical understanding of the content they're watching, and online culture's commodification of extremist opinion. So, zooming into our medium shot now from our long shot there. And I want to clarify before we go any further that the arguments we're going to be making today extend more to IP-driven franchises, but they can also reference more creator and personality-based contents like on YouTube or TikTok, but mostly we're talking about stuff like Star Wars, Marvel, DC's, Star Trek, just those kind of things that we know about, the stuff that the more cliche fandoms are from. And this topic was on my mind because ahead of Superman coming out in a couple days, we're going to be seeing it on Thursday. So it's because I keep seeing the discourse about this movie from the very first promotional image of him putting his boots on in a dark room or whatever. Just from the very first image we have of this movie, people were hating on it like crazy. I've seen so many bad faith discussions from mostly Snyder movie Henry Cavill fans, but also just people who, oh, I don't like the dog. It's too bright. It's too colorful, looks too silly, too jokey. James Gunn's making a Marvel humor kind of movie. Joss Whedon dialogue, just like every other Marvel movie. Superhero fatigue, Superman fatigue. Superman is a hero of a bygone era. This is going to flop. I hope it flops. DC's going to, you know, crash and burn before its new franchise even gets off the ground. I'm rooting for it to fail. Every single trailer I see makes me less excited for this thing. Every single piece is just exhausting. And this movie's been releasing a lot of things, so I've been seeing a lot of it because I'm very excited for it and I'm reading a lot of comments about it, and it's just very frustrating that people have such strong opinions without having seen it yet. It feels like they're coming in to hate this thing or looking for a reason to hate it as fast as they see something that's minorly... I don't know about that.
Whatever happened to, like, getting the reactions like we did for, like, Force Awakens, the first trailer?
Yeah.
Like, what would have happened if that trailer came out today? Would everybody be like, oh, the CGI looks like ass, it's terrible?
And I'll bet you there was there at the time, too. I just don't remember it so much because the vibe was more positive on the whole. And a lot of the trailer reactions I see from people are more positive, but it's the comment sections, it's the scrutiny of every single frame, which we did get back then, but it was more certain kinds of YouTubers that are like breaking down every frame of this trailer for the Easter eggs and whatnot. Now it's like every single reactor is doing that too and breaking down every little shot they don't like in it instead of just seeing it, getting a reaction, you know, and the commenters are doing that too. It's a lot, and it's for everything. Superman is the example that's top of mind right now because it's the one I've been looking into the most, but this is just everything, basically, for most of the last decade. And but the thing is, I don't want to pretend like this is a new problem, because now we get into our close-up and we can actually talk about a bit of the history of fandoms, because the gatekeeping angry nerd is a stereotype spanning multiple generations. I like to think a famous example from even 30 years ago, just for example, is a comic book guy from The Simpsons. That kind of guy was already a stereotype 30 years ago.
That's great.
So I don't know how far back. It probably goes back even further. You know, I'm sure there were heated debates whether Superman could beat up Thor or Hulk 60 years ago.
Well, there was enough that Stan Lee had to comment on it and be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's true. Stan Lee had an entire editor's column where he answered angry letters from fans and, or, you know, praising ones as well. And he interacted with the fans and those were published at the back of the Marvel comics. So, and I'm sure this was going on even before that, like in the 40s too, and just, and for other stuff even further back, even as far back as, I'm thinking about like Arthur Conan Doyle when he killed off Sherlock Holmes in the 1890s. People were so upset about that, they basically made a fan campaign that forced him to bring Sherlock Holmes back to life. You know, so this kind of rabid nerddom has been going on for the minimum 120 years about things people are very passionate about. So that's just to say history shows that nerds have always been very passionate about the things they believe in, and they get very angry and very loving about the things and very protective of them. And one hallmark of nerddom I found through all that is a lot of nerds kind of develop superiority complexes around other practitioners of their hobbies by measuring their knowledge bases against each other. That's just sort of the classic nerd experience, is I want to prove to you that I know more about our mutual topic than you do. So we're just bouncing back and forth. And somewhere along the way, especially in online culture, everyone just kind of thinks they're right and there's no nuance to it anymore. Like, two things can be true. Like, yeah, the major feat of your character does exist. But also, mine does as well. And would Superman beat Thor? Well, the honest answer is it depends on the writer. Whoever's making the book. Like, that's what most of those debates come down to. Even though people can pick, cherry pick the greatest feats of both characters all day long.
Thor got help from Loki and Loki found kryptonite.
Exactly. You can... Or you could say on this universe, this may have been the Thor that was like a frail doctor when he didn't have Mjolnir or something, and Superman was worthy enough to take him away, take Mjolnir away, and made Thor kind of powerless or whatever.
You posed a hypothetical situation, and then all of a sudden our nerd brains went, "Let's find it out."
Exactly. So. The modern idea of fandom toxicity has existed the whole time. There are people out there who will criticize every little bit of IP-driven content and people who will praise almost anything. You can be talking about the most average product possible. Just think of something very average and you will get somebody who said, "Oh, you know, I kind of like that." And somebody else will say, "You're a shill for liking this mid-tier garbage." And the other guy will say, "You know what? That wasn't that great. I kind of dislike that." And you'll say, "You're a hater for disliking a decent product. It wasn't that bad. What's wrong with you?" So it like mid-tier product. One guy likes it. One guy dislikes it. The guy who likes it's a shill. And the guy who kind of disliked it's a hater. It very easily balloons into extremes. Even though the product might not have been that great, the opinions might not have been that extreme, but the other side balloons it for you. So, yeah, like Marvel versus DC was a thing before we were even born. When we were kids, it was people hating the Star Wars prequels. Oh, the originals are better. And, you know, for us, it's the sequels. We whine about all that stuff. And it's...
I like most of the sequels.
I like one of them. And
it's The Last Jedi, isn't it?
Absolutely not. My controversial sequels opinion is that I dislike 8 and 9 for completely different reasons. They have... Well, I mean, okay, sorry. The controversial opinion is that I like Episode 9 better, but I hate them for different reasons. So...
Oh, this episode could go for like an hour now. Beyond... Till we get to the actual point.
Yep. Nerd measuring. That's what we were talking about. Yeah. Justin and I always... debate the merits of the sequels. It's a common discussion. But a big part of the problem for fandoms being so toxic, I feel like, is because these IP, speaking of history, is because these IPs have extended for so long. I think something like, well, let's talk about Star Wars, just for example. The Star Wars franchise has been running since 1977. So it's been running for over 50 years now, and it has experienced so many different iterations, not just in the movies, but in comic books, video games, novelizations, spin-offs, what have you. There was a whole expanded universe of stories out there, which I grew to love before it got canned. That's what made me the gatekeeping toxic fan, was when Disney bought them and canned all the stories I grew up on, and suddenly they had a new universe, which I enjoy some things about it, and I won't pretend all the old stuff is superior, but I'm also like, well, that's what I grew up with, and I like those stories, and a lot of Disney canon's just been bringing back some of the best parts of those old ones to like calm the rage of people like me, who are like, where the hell is Darth Revan? Make it canon again, you cowards. And so, yeah, but Star Wars is like, okay, it's been going for 50 years and you have the original series fans who hate the prequels, who hate the sequels. We grew up with the prequels and the originals. We hate the sequels as a generational thing. It's just, and nobody's ever really going to be satisfied, because the kids who grow up today on the sequels, they're probably going to like what they grew up with, and they're gonna hate whatever Star Wars is 10 years from now. It's just the cycle of fandom. I also look at something like Star Trek, where you get this big split. I think Star Trek has three major generations, I'd say. There's like original series fans, and a lot of them maybe watch original series movies. I feel like a lot of those people dipped out on Star Trek The Next Generation in the 90s shows, like Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine. There was the 90s Star Trek, and those had a lot of fans, and those same people hate modern Star Trek. They hate Star Trek Discovery and those new shows, even though Strange New World kicks ass. It's amazing. But Star Trek Discovery, I don't care for personally. I watched all 5 seasons, though. So I even see that in my own household. You know, my dad grew up in the 60s when he was a kid, and he watched the original series. He never watched Next Gen. My mom's a bit younger than him, watched original series when she was a younger kid in reruns, hated it as a child. Came on with Next Gen when she was in college, loved the hell out of it. So they're both Star Trek fans, but you know, it wasn't until years later when I was watching Next Generation with my mom that my dad finally picked up on it. He's like, oh, I don't know why I never gave this one a chance. But it was decades after the fact before he finally gave it a chance, because his Star Trek was Kirk and Spock, and like that wasn't even like a furious debate in my household or anything. It's just like different. Like even a 10-year gap my parents have between them is like completely different. Like they both like Star Trek, but they like completely different Star Treks. So, like that's the kind of thing I grew up with, and that's what I've seen in my personal life. And then you have stuff like even the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let's look at something like that that we grew up with. A lot of our generation, you know, we were 10 years old when the first Iron Man came out. We grew up with Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Hulk, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Nick Fury, the Avengers, Phase 1 Avengers. And then a lot of them got killed off or retired or spun off, or, you know, now the Avengers are like Shuri, Black Panther, Captain Marvel,
Not the original Black Panther.
No, yeah, the Shuri version, Doctor Strange-ish, and, you know, a bunch of young Avengers. That, I don't know. I'm like, I don't really care anymore. Maybe some new kids like the new Avengers, but I'm like, I was there for most of it, and I'm not that invested anymore. Because all the ones I grew up with are pretty much gone now.
Well, it doesn't help that the quality in general of Hollywood movies has gone down.
Yep.
But.
Which I think is definitely a factor, for sure. But it also feels like, in a way, it still feels like gatekeeping. It's like, okay, is it really that bad? Or are really, we just so accustomed to our things that we're... Because I feel like even if they were good, we'd still be on the not as warmly receiving side of it.
Like Multiverse of Madness.
Sure, Multiverse of Madness was... I think it's got 70-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't care for it. I think you did.
I like it.
I think Ryan didn't mind it either, but
a lot of people really, really dislike it.
I wasn't a fan, personally. And that's partially because I actually enjoyed Wanda, and I feel like it was a character assassination movie after WandaVision, which, you know, that's a later Marvel movie show that I enjoyed. But one of the few Phase 4 things I enjoyed got ruined by one of the next ones that came very soon after it. So even when you kind of had the hooks in me, you ruined my enjoyment with something else I didn't like because it went on too long. It's just, it's the longevity of these franchises. So even with stuff that's like something like Star Trek or Star Wars, you're following like totally different casts. They're kind of like every couple decades, something new comes out. It's kind of for a whole new generation. Something like Marvel just changed so much over time, and you see the changes of characters growing out of the roles and retiring and leaving the universe, that it's just like, well, I've been here since the start, and it's just not the same universe anymore. There wasn't even a hard reset for me to abandon from the start. It was just like, because it was so different, it was just like you wake up, look in the mirror one day and you're in your mid-20s and you're like, huh, it's not the same Marvel as when I was 10. And I can accept that, or I can move on from that, but it's not the same thing anymore. It's not the franchise that drew me in as a fan anymore. Got to face facts there. It's different. I'm not going to say it's objectively garbage or people should enjoy it, but it's not what drew me in anymore. And that's okay. I do think there was a decline in quality, but it's...
Yeah, there's no more Dutch angles in Thor movies.
I know, that's a...
That's a steep decline.
Major disappointment. Now, one aspect of fandom I will harp on is a lack of understanding of what actually works about your franchise. And I want to go back to Superman, because I see people online, once again, complaining about, well, he's got a dog, and like he really cares about the dog too much. I don't get it. The dog's goofy. The dog's stupid. The colors are too bright. You know, bring back Henry Cavill. Bring back Zack Snyder. And I gotta say this as somebody who's on this podcast made an entire episode defending the Zack Snyder trilogy. I have been defending those movies very strongly online and in person for 10 years plus. I signed the petition for, release the Snyder Cut. I was there. I was spreading the word at the time. I was a part of that movement for a very long time. And I gotta say that they are, just shut up at this point. Because the thing about Zack Snyder's version of Superman is it was always, in my head, kind of a interesting Elseworlds take. It was dark, muted color palettes. It was very serious. It was very moody. It was very somber. It was a take on Superman. It was a guy wearing a Superman costume, wrestling with some tough moral choices. But you know, fundamentally, it's not what I wanted to see from a Superman project. This is like full-on Silver Age of comic books. It's got Crypto the Superdog, bright colors. You know, he smiles, he's emotive, he's like a human being, not just like a depressed god who's weighed down by the burden of responsibility. He's, you know, even the suit's bright. People hate that. He's got robots in the Fortress of Solitude. He fights kaijus breathing fire at him. You know, he's got to restrain himself. He feels human in a way that Henry Cavill felt like the lonely god archetype, which is, to be fair, a part of Superman. But those movies lean so far into it that they forgot that the man part is more important of Superman for that particular IP. Clark Kent is more important than Superman.
See, I get confused when we talk about like comic characters, and it's like, okay, but like comic characters got different runs. And if you yep. didn't like a run, like right now the main Spider-Man run is very controversial. A lot of people don't like it.
Yep.
But if you don't like that run, don't read it. There's if you're like, oh, I love this character for this run, then you have that run. It still exists. I don't understand why people have such a hard time adapting to the idea that it's like, okay, this character can be done in a different way. It doesn't.
Yep. I was always kind of two minds on it, speaking of Superman in particular. And that is why I liked the Snyder movies, because that's how I treated them, as a different run on the character. To me, it was certain characters, especially with longevity, like Superman. He's got a very set code of morals and ideals. You know, he's truth, justice in the American way, or, you know, truth, justice in a better tomorrow is the new tagline. You know, he's got 80 years worth of history to pull from, and in most versions, he's a certain way. And the Snyder versions don't deviate from that way enough to say, okay, well, Henry Cavill's version isn't, you know, he's not Homelander, he's not Omni-Man, he's not, like, so fundamentally different that you're, like, totally missing the point. But he, you know, missed the point enough of the character. Like, he's going more for the power fantasy version of Superman than the farm boy from Kansas who just wants to help the world and make it a better place. That's at the core of the character. It's like, it's the burden of being a hero, which most adaptations of Superman don't feature, because he's not usually that type of hero. He wants to help people. He wants to do as much as he can, and he's not upset about it. He just likes to help people. He's a more bright personality. He's not a traumatic figure. He grew up with both parents on a farm in Kansas. He had a happy childhood. He had struggles, obviously, as any human does, but it's like the Man of Steel stuff leans very, very hard into the trauma.
Well, it's up to your interpretation, because even right there, you're like, okay, yeah, he's both his parents. Or you could interpret the other way and be like, well, actually, his parents are both dead and his whole species is dead.
Yep.
Right?
And once again,
there's two different takes on it. And, you know,
those are aspects. It is all there. It's just what those movies focused on is not what a lot of traditional Superman fans wanted to see. And we got that run. That's fine. The reason I say Snyder fans shut up is because you got your trilogy. Zack Snyder's Justice League ended things well enough for Henry Cavill. And now we have David Corenswet, and we're back to that more traditional take. Because it's
tried and true.
Well, it's tried and true, but it also feels, in today's environment where everything needs to be super edgy and cool and grounded, which kind of started with the Nolan Batman movies, it's like, well, why can't we have a hero who likes what he's doing in bright colors with the, you know, the robots and the dog, and like lean into the goofiness of the old comics, and this guy who represents ideals from a bygone era in the modern era, and we can see how that conflict, but he is a bit of a relic in modern times. And I think that's what James Gunn is going for, is he is just this really earnest guy who wants to help facing modern political realities. And I'm like, well, why? That's fine. The world can change. But Superman should stay who he is. And he can deal with the world as it is. But he, as a character, is a certain way. And I'm fine to see a traditional version of that. And I don't want to debate a heck of a lot more about Superman particularly. But the point is, a lot of people lack an understanding. Like, I don't think fans of Superman should be harassing people the way the Snyder fans do. I don't think even Zack Snyder himself appreciates the things that are said and done in his name. I'm like, how can a fan of Superman, the character who's all about uplifting and helping people and being a symbol of hope and being better than yourself, look up, look to the sky, be inspired. How can these people cause so much grief and harassment? I think of the same thing about like Star Trek. I'm like, how can fans of Star Trek be bigoted and hateful? I'm like, this is the most diverse franchise I've ever seen. Going back to the 1960s, you had a black woman on the bridge in the middle of the civil rights movement. You had a Japanese man on the bridge 20 years after Pearl Harbor when there were still tensions. You had, you know, Spock was I think they called him like a devilish looking alien. Usually in the 60s, aliens weren't good guys. Aliens were alien invaders. They were threats. You know, you had Chekhov, a Russian in the middle of the Cold War there. Like, that show was breaking political boundaries 60 years ago. And it makes me so hard pressed when like Star Trek Discovery comes out and Sinequa Martin Green is Michael Burnham, captain of that show. And you see so many races decrying the fact that there's a black female lead of Star Trek. And, you know, there's a lot of legitimate complaints to be made about Michael Burnham and how they wrote that character and Star Trek Discovery in general. But I'm just like, how can you be bigoted about a franchise like this? Like, are you people seriously just turning off their brains and watching Star Trek for sci-fi action spectacle and totally missing all the philosophies behind these franchises?
I mean, I do think that there's a lot of people who aren't active watchers when they watch things. Yeah. Like, some people take TV like it's like, okay, turn off your brain. And so some of those messages, I think, don't quite get it. But maybe more like the original series was subtle about it, right? Like, it's obviously not subtle, but they never call attention to the fact that, like, they don't pry at it and be like, well, there's a black woman on the Brit. No.
Well, Chekhov, it wouldn't be, you know, a couple hundred years ago, we would have been fierce enemies, you and me. Like, they didn't call attention to it that way.
The only time I can think about it was in the fifth movie or whatever, when they got Chekhov
trying to get into the ship. Nuclear vessels. The Russian guy asking for the nuclear base.
They don't call it out there. It's a subtle lean in. If you get the joke, you get the joke. If you don't get the joke, whatever. But I think that's the thing is you naturally, you're just, these characters are on the bridge. There's no call of attention that about why each one is being individual on the bridge. Yep. They're just there. And I think that kind of works for pushing a message, kind of, because you're just making it more natural. But when you call attention to it, you feel like that's being shoved down your throat, basically.
Yeah. Actually, Uhura was a double, because she was a black woman on the bridge and she was also a woman on the bridge, which for feminist movement, that was a huge deal at the time as well. And, like, it had actual political realities people did see. Like, Martin Luther King Jr., he watched Star Trek. And Nichelle Nichols wanted to leave the show at one point, and Martin Luther King called her up and was like, no, you can't leave the show. Star Trek's one of the only shows I watch. I let my kids watch and stay up as a family to watch this. And like, you know, for a civil rights leader like that, he enjoyed the show. And it was that actual empowering thing. And like you said, they didn't have to call a lot of attention. Like, just her being there was enough for civil rights leaders to appreciate it.
I think that's the difference is if you have active watchers who are actually paying attention to the message and want to think about it, they're going to think about it. If you have non-active watchers, your message is there, but it's subtle, that it doesn't draw attention to it to them. Maybe it will subtly get to them, but you're not going to have those people. If you start the non-active people who aren't trying to think about the message, when you start shoving the message down their throat, now they're forced to think about it and they dislike that. And it's not really, you're not actively thinking about, you know, the wider reaches of it, just the narrow focus of whatever you made clear.
Well, that kind of brings me into my next point about, it's not just a lack of understanding of like the themes of the franchises themselves, but it's a lack of critical awareness as consumers of media. Because I agree with you, people watch blindly and they don't, even if they are watching actively, a lot of people just don't understand the nuances of the things they're critiquing, because they'll harp on stuff like social justice in a story because it's the only thing they can understand. Like, they don't, you know, not to be condescending about it, but it's just like they don't know how to analyze story structures or arcs or dialogue in an articulate way. They just kind of have a gut feeling of I like this or I didn't like it. And it makes me kind of sound pseudo-intellectual to rant about wokeness in this movie or the plot holes that I caught. Oh, the plot didn't make sense. So, like, the story of something is the only thing most people, or like the gut reaction visual style is the only thing people can really comment on when they don't know the technicalities of what goes into making it. They comment on whatever they can, and just by virtue of them not knowing the craft, it lacks nuance, and they just latch on. So that's why you get such shallow takes that are like, oh, well, it's woke and there's plot holes, because you don't have anything else to say. you can't even think of anything else to say because you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, well, even me, I find when I critique something, usually the things I have to say about stuff is parts of things. Parts that really drew my attention, because I'm like, oh, you know, the stuff that I'm really interested in, like, I know some of the craft of film, some of that's my stuff. And sometimes I notice the stuff that was done really well, and sometimes I notice the stuff that wasn't done so well. But there is a large portion in the middle that I don't have a very good say on and a good way to critique on, because it's not really my expertise in there.
I know a huge blind spot for me as a reviewer has always been music scores. I play music. I, you know, in a concert band, I dabble in writing melodies, but I don't really know what goes into, actually, I do know what goes into making a score. It's hard for me. But I don't have enough knowledge of the craft to really comment on it. I'm like, when I talk about music scores in movies, if I ever mention them in my reviews, it is really just those shallow gut reactions. I liked it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe I'll say enough, because the only thing I really know about scores in movies is they're supposed to help underline the subtext. They're supposed to tell you what the characters are feeling without the dialogue having to say it. If the movie is well-written enough to let the actors not say any lines there, like facial acting plus music equals I understand what's happening. And that's as far as I can comment on score, it's doing its job. I can't really talk about it anymore technically. But even then, that's more than a lot of people would be able to comment on, because they don't know the function of a score in a movie.
I guess if you don't know the craft, you don't have a lot to go on other than everybody. it's natural to humans to tell stories. Yeah. Everybody knows how to tell a story, whether they think so or not. They know how to tell a story. It's a natural thing that makes us human. So they know storytelling. So that's usually where they get, but
the craft of storytelling is being able to hold your attention and maybe entertain you and maybe let you take something away from it.
Well, I think that's why they, yeah, you know, everybody latches on to critiquing story because everybody has some skill in telling stories.
Yeah.
But how does that go to the wokeness?
Well, once again, it's because it's one of the few things they, like talking about technicality, right? What I was saying about scores and stuff about the wokeness, it's such in our culture at this point that people are going in looking for it. They, as critics, don't know what good cinematography is. They don't know what a good score looks like. They don't know what good dialogue looks like either, really, except these gut reactions, like I'm saying. But they are going in with a critical eye for messaging and stuff like that. I guess
we all have experience with society. Yeah. So we have the experience to speak about that, I guess.
I think people are going in looking for that. They have enough critical awareness to be looking for things like that because it is on their mind. So in a way, that is a form of critique, but it's just a very overly done one because that's basically, it used to be people just kind of knew storytelling. And now people know storytelling. And also we're hyper aware that movies have messaging now, which we didn't used to be as a culture.
So do you think that if the original Star Trek aired now, it would get called out for?
Oh, hell yes. 100%. 110%. People would call it a,
I guess because we've just had so much in our face messaging that you're always looking for it now.
And that's what bothers me is when I see people call things woke garbage and I actually watch it myself and I'm like, okay, but it did the more Star Trek thing. You're calling it woke garbage because it had a diverse cast. But like, I see woke garbage as, like you said, the stuff that really is in your face about it, has no nuance, is like, I'm trying to make a point and I can't, like, I as the storyteller can't articulate it in a way that feels organic. So I'm just going to spell out the messaging for you. That's lazy. That's bad writing. But when things just exist and you're calling it out just for existing, that's when I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. You think you're making a smart point by bringing this up, but it was really inconsequential and just makes you look like a prick. So there is a line.
Well, yeah, if it's arguable whether or not it was intentional messaging,
yeah,
it kind of makes the person who's calling it out as being woke look like an idiot.
And I do, to be clear, I do believe it would be intentional messaging, but it was intentional messaging done right. It's not, people treat the fact that it exists as a problem, but basically everything has messaging in it. It's just, how was it presented? People think messaging in general is the problem. I'm strongly a believer that it's the presentation of the messaging. How subtle was it? How effective was the message conveyed? But people just think, oh, it's trying to tell me a message, therefore bad. And that's something.
Well, I think the message does matter, though, because, like,
the message matters, yeah.
Like, Star Trek is the original is pretty subtle with it, but still people would have an issue with it.
Yeah.
And it's not that in your face with it.
Right? Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think of other examples right now that are just like, I don't know. You go back 40 years ago, just like having a diverse cast, nobody really cared. I don't know why I'm thinking about like Rocky right now and like Apollo Creed or something. Like Carl Weathers' Apollo Creed is like a big character in that movie. I'm like, okay, can you imagine like Rocky fighting the black guy now? How like,
of course it's gotta be the black guy. Yeah, that'd be the comments.
Like Apollo Creed, like just existing in that movie, he was the heavyweight champion of the world. He'd worked his way up through sheer skill to become a heavyweight champion. And Rocky, the Italian white guy from Philadelphia who is scrappy and can't really box. Okay. Like, but people would make it a race thing. It wasn't a race thing in the original. It was just like, you could read some subtext into it maybe, but that wasn't the point. It was about two athletes.
But if it was presented differently, if it's like, if you got Apollo Creed going on and on about, oh, it was really hard to get here only because I was black.
Exactly.
It was hard to get here.
Exactly.
Well, now you're shoving the message down my throat.
A modern movie would 100% have a scene like that now, where he, you're right. That's what modern movies.
It was harder for me.
Yes, that is a scene a modern movie with bad messaging would have, but that wasn't there 50 years ago. It was just, you can maybe assume how he got here and what his life might have been like beforehand, but it was just like, okay, yeah, he's a good athlete and I respect him for that. Sure. He's just a challenge. He's the main antagonist to overcome here. I'm not thinking about him because like, people didn't think so strongly in terms of race back then. They kind of took it. They understood the messaging better because they weren't looking for bad faith in it.
See, it's surprising that we were less conscious of race than we are now. Doesn't that mean we're like more racist now?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, I even think in our own lives, we as a culture, in my lifetime, are more hyper fixated on race than ever before. Like, I come from a pretty diverse family. My grandmother's Afro-Jamaican. My other grandmother was, you know, raised in Bermuda. She's the only white person in her family. All her siblings were mixed race. Like, but I never thought as a child, like, oh yeah, I'm from a
very progressive.
Yeah, from a very mixed race family. I never thought about it that way, like until the 2010s when race became top of mind. Like, yeah, my grandmother's black. I never thought twice about that as a kid, really. Other than just, yeah, she looks different than me. That's it. But it's not till later, like, race becomes a focal point.
That's right. Here at Close Up, we're progressive. Joe is
quarter black.
A quarter black.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna get called woke because you announced that.
Yeah. Exactly. See, I'm wearing white on top, black pants. I'm also part First Nations.
Oh man. See,
I'm like an eighth First Nations Métis. Yeah. So another big problem in the fandoms is just the online commodification of hate, which, like I said, toxic positivity, that's definitely a thing as well, but hate sells better because we're just hardwired as a human species to hate on things more. Like, the news has a saying, if it bleeds, it leads, and media is basically the same way. You see red thumbnails of people with angry faces, like, worst thing ever. Well, comic book guy, worst Superman movie ever.
Well, they had, a while back, they had a channel called I Hate Everything, and it was kind of semi a joke, but also picking on, like,
yeah,
different parts. But as it went on, like, it was funny until the guy was like, I don't want to do this anymore because now everybody on the internet actually acts like this and it's not funny anymore. So he kind of flipped the thing and he did I Love Everything for a bit.
But yeah. I remember another one similar to that was people complained how this channel CinemaSins kind of ruined the internet in part. Because back when fandoms were more, like, on YouTube, when people saw more viral videos at large, his videos were very, very big. And originally, they were just kind of like some legitimate criticisms mixed with joke criticisms. And then the joke, it used to be like 10-minute videos with some legitimate critique, and then they ballooned into like 20-minute videos with the most nitpicky things imaginable. And I think he still does them. I haven't watched CinemaSins in years, but like, that's how online discourse became. It kind of erupting from fandoms like that, where it was just nitpick everything that's, you know, sinnable in a movie. Everything from like, oh, that's a continuity or it's a bad movie. I saw that, it broke my immersion, it's bad. To, oh, that line of dialogue was really stupid.
Oh no, there was a coffee cup in Game of Thrones.
Stuff like that. Just, and people harp on it like it was a god-awful episode or entirely bad show. Like, okay, mistakes happen. Things are stupid. But like, once again, losing the nuance in a situation. I did like the channel Cinema Wins, which was the antithesis of Cinema Sins, where the guy basically just praised a lot.
What was good about stuff?
Yeah, where Cinema Sins was like nitpicky everything bad, Cinema Wins was like nitpicky everything good. Even when the movie was bad, he would like stretch to find things good about it, which sometimes was kind of done for humor. But, you know, I appreciated the positivity more. But like I said, it's still kind of an extremist thing of like, we're really trying to dislike something or we're really trying to defend something. Once again, I've done that too with the Snyder movies. Like, I know they're flawed, but, you know, I still enjoyed them. And yes, I do recognize that in my discussions of stuff like that, I come across as the gatekeeping nerd. But I do. Well,
most of the time you were going with Ryan, who you, when you do a criticism with somebody else, you kind of have to play again, like you kind of have to play more into your side.
Yeah, but I do strongly have my opinions. I do fully concede I am the gatekeeping nerd as well. I have strong opinions too. And when I see stuff like the new Superman, I'm like, well, there's a lot I love about this and a lot that, okay, well, we'll see how that plays out in context, but I'm not hating on it immediately. And that's why I, you know, part of me to get the likes wants to do more reaction videos and stuff like that. But also I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not like that interesting a reactor. I'm pretty deadpan most of the time. But also I don't like the culture of over analysis on things. I prefer this kind of podcast review form where we just like take an hour to analyze in depth. If you're watching this, you care about more than binary opinions, which I appreciate. Thank you for the few you hear. But, and to that point, I figure I only see two ways out of this hole that fandom has dug for itself, besides eliminating Reddit from the face of the earth. And step one, get off the internet. I figure we'll never eliminate our need for outside validation of our opinions, but I figure we can make a more concerted effort to at least limit our nerdy debates with people in our social circles or people in our general area who will debate in good faith. Because sometimes, a lot of times on the internet, you have an opinion and those opinions balloon, like you said, with, you know, even just like I get stronger in my opinion because of disagreement. And online is just built for like, you could be arguing with a bot who's just trying to troll and rile you up. But usually in person, even if a person disagrees with you and forces you into a trench for like combative debates, it's not because they're trying to troll you, at the very least. You just, it's more real, even if it still can be extreme. It's like, I'm here, I'm talking to you, and I think The Last Jedi sucks. You disagree.
Well, I think one of the things that contributes to it is the fact that when you have negativity or positivity, people are more likely to follow one or the other. You brought up Reddit. Reddit's a great example for stuff because two people can post the same comment that's just a period. And if like the, if you downvote that first one and it's got a minus one immediately, that one will go down. The other one will go up. People just follow the trend. A lot of times people will just follow a trend. And any comment that hits the negatives usually spirals down into the negatives when it's like,
That's a good point. And it's kind of the same thing of, like I was saying about the Superman criticisms right up top. I was reeling off a list of stuff that I see. All those things I said up top, I've seen on basically every single piece of media released. The criticisms become circular, and it's different people commenting them all across the internet, but it's basically the same ideas phrased by different people over and over and over again. It's nearly copy-paste in some ways. I'm like, is there an original thought at all here, or did people just see something they latched onto and they're copy-pasting it everywhere they possibly can? They're like spreading certain messages as far and wide as possible. And it goes for positive ones too. But I'm just like, I've seen basically all the opinions on this countless times everywhere. You just, and like, depending on what, like you said, depending on what site you're at or who says it first, it might get more traction. The guy who says, I think this is going to suck, might get super upvoted or.
But I think if by seeing that downvotes or whatever, people start, they interpret it, the original source, more negatively. So if you think about that towards a movie, when you start seeing the downvotes of people being like, oh, it not actual downvotes, but like,
yep,
the equivalent to downvotes would be people saying online that the movie sucks. The more you see that, the more I think that also twists people's own opinions.
It definitely does, for me especially. I saw there was one leaked review for Superman, and this is one where I had to exercise some critical thought myself, because the guy in the leaked review made some mention of, oh, well, you know, this isn't going to be a spoiler, by the way, but
I don't want to hear spoilers.
The movie's going to come out, like, the next day after this is posted, but it's not a spoiler, I promise. So in this leaked review, the guy was like, oh, well, you know, I kind of wish they'd focus more on, you know, Clark Kent's farm life, you know, more about his backstory, make us connect with him a little bit more as a, like, on a backstory perspective, because I didn't, you know, I didn't like that we didn't get more of that. And I'm like, yeah, oh, well, that kind of sucks. They didn't focus more on his backstory. Okay. And then I think about it a bit more and I'm like, hold on a minute. That's not really a good criticism, because most movies, you don't learn the entire backstory of all your main characters. Why can't we just jump into a movie and, you know, Clark Kent's been Superman for, I think, 3 years in this movie already, and why can't we just understand who this guy is based on where he is now? Why do I have the need to care about him more by learning where he came from? I'm like, that information probably is in the movie. Just because it didn't get harped on, why does this reviewer care that it wasn't harped on? Because, like, I guarantee you that information was in the movie, but they're treating it like a negative thing because maybe they didn't understand, like, subtextual subtleties on it, or, like, you know, like, you see a negative review like that, and I'm like, okay, that's a criticism, but it's such a subjective criticism that I don't think counts in most cases.
Well, I find, like,
and people latch on
have it. An obsession with trying to more than it used to be. People have an obsession with having all of the knowledge. Yeah. They want to have every detail in this movie. Where you think about, like, go to A New Hope. We had no idea what the Clone Wars is. We had no idea about the Jedi. Like, all, there's stuff there. If you watch A New Hope for the very first time, there is stuff in there. There are words. There is entire sentences that you're just like, I have no idea what this is. And that's very common in older movies, because you can connect the dots. You don't need to have all the details, but you can connect the dots. Well, I don't know what a Clone Wars is, but I know what a war is. So it was obviously, and he's past tense, so it was obviously some type of war that involved Luke's father.
Or I think about, you know, like Obi-Wan teaching Luke about the Force, but then later on we see, like, Vader force choking the Admiral, and he's like, don't be so proud of this technological terror you've constructed. The power to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force. And that's the first time you see the Force used to like choke somebody. And you're like, ooh, this thing is powerful. Like we heard Obi-Wan describe it as more of a nice thing. But we're like, ooh, there's a dark side to this too. And like, we didn't know all about like how this guy came to be. Like we didn't learn his backstory for another 30 years. But like, even just something like that is like, ooh, the Force is like, there's two sides to it. Okay.
I just find that you can't, with a movie anymore, you can't just pitch a scenario. You can't just have a scenario and get to the point. And that hurts things a lot.
It's got to start at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's got to, like, the Acolyte did that. Yeah, we're going to start at, as far to the beginning as we feel comfortable going. We had to see them as children.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
that's true. But,
and then you sit there at the end of the season and you're like, this is the pitch for the show. This is where I thought we were starting.
You're right. My favorite thing about A New Hope is that it starts right in the middle. From the very opening of the movie, we're seeing a chase mid-progress. We didn't see how the chase started. We just know this giant ship that looks very imposing is attacking a smaller vessel. And we're just like, oh, okay, we're right in this. We got to figure out context on the fly. People can't stand that.
Well, no. Even if you're... Because some people might make the argument, well, they started in the middle and, you know... But even if you say, okay, you start at Phantom Menace, it starts in the middle of a trade negotiation with, like, they're just there. They're just there. It's not explained what's going on. You have to piece it together. And I'm sure there's stuff, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But you're being dumped into a scenario. This is the scenario. Here, roll with it. Figure it out.
I'll give The Force Awakens credit. Even The Force Awakens did that. Kylo Ren's trying to, like, extract information from some guy we don't know about his first order or genociding an entire village. I'm like, okay, you set up questions and never really answered them personally. That was the flaw. But it had a lot of interesting, it got my interest from that first movie.
But I feel like what they ended up doing in that trilogy is they tried to explain everything. We're talking Star Wars, where Star Wars has now expanded so big that they're trying to explain every nitpicky thing. You've got Rogue One, you've got these things that are explaining the nitpicky thing.
You but have Andor, my favorite, when you mentioned Rogue One, so we have Rogue One to explain A New Hope, and then we have two seasons of Andor to explain Rogue One. So we don't just have prequels, we got prequels for the prequels now?
Yeah, like everybody wants everything explained, where you go to a lot of older movies and it's just, here you go. Sometimes there is no explanation because that's just kind of how the creative process goes sometimes. Sometimes something just happens.
You know what I like about old media compared to new media in that way? We're getting off on a big tangent here. But what I like about old media is that most of it started right in the middle. Very first time you saw Superman, he was busting into the governor's mansion saying, I think like the wrong person's going to get executed for this crime. I'm hauling you in to give him a pardon. We didn't get a backstory for Superman for a long time after that. You just kind of knew he was a very strong alien. I think like Sherlock Holmes, like, okay, that first story was like, he was already, you know, a smart guy who could do stuff. Like, that was just an origin story for the first time he met Watson. But, like, he was already existing in the world. We didn't get his childhood or anything. Like, they were already middle-aged guys by the time they met. Like, a lot of old media just started in the middle. I don't think it was till, like, the 60s. Actually, oh, so, like, James Bond is a good example. Another one. In Casino Royale, Sean Connery's already... not Casino Royale. Dr. No, Sean Connery's already James Bond. He's just going on missions already. We didn't get a James Bond origin story until Casino Royale in 2005. You know, I think that was the first James Bond book. But like, oh, this is the one where he gets his 00 license. And like, it took 40 years for them to, in the movies, to do the origin story one. Same thing with Batman Begins. You got like Batman 89 just jumps right in. He's already Batman. That's like scene one on Batman. Next Batman reboot is Batman Begins. whole process to becoming Batman.
But yeah, nowadays we want to see all the details. We need all the details or else we can't watch a movie. We need to watch every single Marvel movie to watch the newest one. You need to see all of them. You can't just jump into the new one. And so then you end up with these comments about that are hating, and they're like, well, I didn't get to see the details I wanted to see.
Therefore, it's bad.
And it's like, well, whatever happened to movies just telling a story? Like, there's your story. I don't need to explain anything to you. Just,
and once again, going back to the lack of critical thought, you could probably pick up those details if you paid more attention to, like, an actor's facial expression or an Easter egg of a musical cue or that costume piece in the background or, like, a prop or something. Like, it was, your answer was probably in there, just not thoroughly explained in dialogue, because people only accept it if the movie tells you what's happening. They miss the other elements of filmmaking that are giving you what you're looking for. So, yeah, so there is step one, debate not on the internet, because it's just going to shove you into deeper rabbit holes. Except that you're not getting every detail, and pay more attention. Step three, I say this is important, because the only way to make fandoms less toxic in this regard is, some people might say, you know, get a life, just do something else, don't worry about it so hard.
Touch grass.
I say the exact opposite. I say lean further into it, because we as nerds, like I said up top, we already have this inclination to learn everything about our hobby to one up other nerds. So just lean in further. If you already know everything about Star Wars, you know all the in-lore universe facts, you know a lot of the trivia about the making of things, you even know some of the producers' names and whatever. Like, you know, enough Star Wars fans know who Kathleen Kennedy is. I don't know how many other franchises you know the producers' names. But, like, learn how a movie is actually made, though. Learn what goes into setting up a shot, the lighting, the writing, the craft of acting, or special effects work, how it's edited for flow, how score is created. How about learning all the details of what goes into a movie? I think that's the only way to get past those gut reactions of, I like this or I don't like this. Because you can, as a nerd, are going to have opinions on lore and story all day long. Because you know all these things and you know what you think is getting right, you think, or what's getting wrong. And people judge their whole opinion of a product based on that. But if you know what went into making that movie or TV show or comic book, you can say, well, you know what? I disliked everything about Star Wars The Last Jedi. But it was a great looking visual movie. Rian Johnson used some pretty cool camera tricks. Mark Hamill's acting is great, despite disliking a lot of the character choices. The writing made for Luke Skywalker, the special effects work is amazing. The whole Scarif final battle scene at the end there on the salt marshes, and even having to, like, you know, use the footsteps in the sand on, like, from the white to the red, like, just the way it's shot. Like, John Williams' score is amazing. I'll whine about the story all day long, but I can't say it's, you know, an irredeemable movie, because I appreciate the filmmaking craft in it. I think you turn the sound off and turn my brain off about the lore bits that I hate. It's a well-crafted movie. It's all the script I have a problem with. And that's a big issue. It's hard to get past when you're talking about liking or disliking it. But as a critic, I'm remiss if I don't say the rest of it was pretty well executed. So I'm like, I'll whine about it for sure. You know, I still...
Personally, I wish they would do more of the behind the scenes like documentaries and yeah. make them longer. I would love to see more of that. If you know,
yeah,
like that's really interesting. Sometimes like they've been doing it more. Like Netflix has done quite a few. They're not pretty very good. Long, but
they're like half an hour. They're pretty good.
I wish they were. I wish they were longer.
I've seen a couple of those for sure.
But it's very interesting seeing the crafting of the final product. Even something that's not good would be interesting to see how they did it, and you know, see the struggles that went into making the final product. You might not like the final product, but you can appreciate people's work. That's one thing, is that I don't know if most people see movies as art. Like, some movies are, maybe they're just soulless studio cash grabs, but there's still somebody there that put in the art to be like, oh, this is my master scene. Like, I know for a fact, even in those cash grab shill movies,
somebody was proud of their work.
Somebody at some point was proud of their work there. Maybe an actor nailed a line one time. There is a lot. These are like, everybody who works on a movie is an artist.
You know, that reminds me of in the ILM season 2 documentary, there was a bit where somebody was talking about the poor reception of The Phantom Menace, and he was talking to George Lucas about it. And George Lucas was like, well, like, man, but don't you care that they hated Jar Jar? They hated the character. And he's like, yeah, but you don't see any of these people complaining about the effect looking bad. Everybody bought into the character of Jar Jar. They weren't put off by the special effect, so we did our job. They didn't like the character, but the immersion in the story was there because they did such a good job on the technical side. You can whine about Jar Jar because you believe in Jar Jar. And so he's like, I still see that as a win in a way. And I kind of agree. Like, people take the technical side so for granted that they can afford to whine about the other stuff. But you have to understand how much effort, even in the worst possible product, went into this to say, like, well, look, you may hate it, but it's actually not comparatively bad. Like, there was a lot to be commended in here.
I don't like the way he walks. It's stupid looking. Well, it looks realistic though, doesn't it? Enough that you buy into this alien having this strange gait.
Yeah.
Like,
so yeah, those are my three things to help fix bad fandoms, is get more off the internet, talk more about this stuff in real life with real people, not with bots. Number two was what, remind me what you...
Not all the details.
Not all the details. Don't, you know, just fill in the gaps in your own mind. Subtlety's good. You know, it makes you work harder later. Like, Wikipedia exists for a reason. It, like, every single person you see in A New Hope has just, like, got a whole page there. Every random patron in the bar has a page. And number three, lean further into the hobby. Learn all the technical details so you'll have actually more to say. You might still think your least favorite thing in the world is trash after you learn how it was made and whether... And look, to me, the big thing there is that's what separates audience and critic scores. That's why you can see a movie that critics love and audiences hate, because audiences are really just looking at the story. That's just a measure of, did I like it? Whereas critics are looking at the complete picture, where story is just one element of dozens. That's why a critic can have an 80% movie and people are like, oh, well, it was pretentious garbage. I'm like, well, yeah, but it was a well-made movie. So that's why I, as a critic, always try to split the difference. And I'm like, if you listen to my reviews for a very long time, I'll commend a lot and then still give a crap rating at the end.
Can we really complain about Wes Anderson? I mean,
you love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
You know what?
But you gotta commend him. His movies look good.
Definitely,
they look good. But
they're beautiful movies.
Sometimes you're just like,
that's pretentious.
Pretentious and boring.
Yeah. But once again, it's about the. You gotta see that there's more to it than the surface level. Well, I didn't like that. Go into why. Just if you like it or you didn't like it, just figure out why. What about it, besides the story, bugged you? How was it presented in a way that you didn't care for? So, just to recap our points for you, being a fan is exhausting. There's a lot of toxic positivity and even more hate on the internet. Thanks to franchises running for way too long, people lacking an understanding of the themes of their content and lacking the articulation to critique it, and just the online culture commodification of extremist opinion. But there are positive ways out of it. So, on that note, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlaneMedia. And check out ThoughtPlane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts there for free. And you can donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe and Justin. Till next time.